Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Comic-Con Stars. This is Dr. John with all the entertainment that you can handle for a Thursday night. And I think all of our guests are probably on tonight. It's good to hear everybody and all. Papa Stroh, are you there with us?
Yes, great. I was listening to some Tom Jones waiting to get on, so I'm happy to be here.
Okay, that's good. Thank you. Yes, I was guilty of having a new internet service put in today, and we had a little bit of a technology problem to get on. Dave Atwell, are you here with us?
Hey, don't lie, John. We all know it was the Russians.
Oh, Greg Bo, you weren't supposed to say that. Yes, and we have Greg Bo Watson. And hopefully we have Brett Watson, and hopefully we have John Strickland.
Yes, you
do. We have a cast of characters tonight. Well, first of all, I want to go through the announcements like we always enjoy doing. And first of all, this coming Sunday is going to be the Charlotte Comic-Con back at the Embassy Suites Hotel in, of course, beautiful Concord Mill, North Carolina. Greg Bo, you're going to be there, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to be there.
That's good. Papa Stroh, you're going to be there, right?
In the flesh, baby.
In the flesh, baby. That's right. Of course, Carolina caricatures will be there.
Reference from Rocky III.
Oh, okay. I don't know. It sounded a little bit like a Dusty Rhodes, but that's okay.
I'm
anyway,
a little
yeah, we're
green twisting there, yeah.
Hard times.
Oh, it's going to be we got a live bunch tonight. No, we're going to have a lot of fun at the Charlotte Comic-Con, and it's going to be just a blast. And then next Saturday on the 18th, we're going to be having another one of our little shows up at Hardwire Tattoo in Jacksonville. More about that later. We'll tell everybody about it, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So anyway, it's great to be here. Greg Bo Watson, I want to start with you first. How are you doing?
Not too bad.
That's good.
Just rocking and rolling, my brother.
Rocking and rolling. That's exactly right. Well, you've got with you, first of all, your son, the amazing Brett the Crippler Watson. Brett, are you around there with us?
Yes, there I am.
Good. I want to start with you first. Tell us a little bit about you are doing exceptionally well as a wrestler up in the Spartanburg area. Tell us a little bit about that promotion that you work with and what you've been doing.
Okay. I've been working at APW, American Pro Wrestling, in Boiling Springs. And just got named Rookie of the Year up there for the match.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So,
well, that is wonderful news. Good. And also, we've got with us Greg Bo. You and I were talking on the last show, and you said you had a friend, well, actually a relative of yours, John Strickland, who is an expert
That's right.
in catch-as-catch-can wrestling. John, are you with us?
Is he with us?
I don't know.
Wonder if he got the number.
Maybe he didn't get the text when we had a little technology problem. Yeah, Greg Bo, if you would help me out, could you forward that to him because we're on.
I'll do it.
Thank you very much. I tell you what, I learned a lot about not getting a new internet service the day that you're going to do Comic-Con Stars. I learned that the hard way. I sure did. It was a little bit of a. It was an amazing thing today trying to get everything set up, but I know that we'll get up. We'll get all this going. So so I tell you what, Brett, congratulations again on, of course, on being the Rookie of the Year. What kind of matches, who have you been wrestling up there in the Spartanburg area?
Oh, I've been wrestling almost anyone that will step in the ring with me. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, had a couple good matches. Had a casket match not too awfully long ago. Which ended up great. Had a couple of triple threats, so always fun.
All right,
you tell
you
I'm a proud dad.
Oh, Greg, well, I know you are. Now, Brett, you do know who had the original casket match. Do you know who had the original casket match?
I believe that it's the Undertaker.
Actually, we got a list, and believe it or not, the first casket match was Ivan Koloff versus Dusty Rhodes, and it was in 1980. And then
That's awesome.
Yes. And then there was about an eight-year span that there were no casket matches. And then the next one was The Undertaker. And, in fact, if you take a look, we've actually got a list of it on Comic-Con Stars. It's really pretty cool. They started it, and, in fact, we talked about casket matches when we were doing a little bit of a memorial edition for Ivan Koloff, who passed away a couple weeks ago, one of the great wrestlers of our time. And what a wonderful, wonderful wrestler, what a wonderful person, all the great things that he did. We're so glad that we knew Ivan Koloff and that he was absolutely just a fine person. So anyway, yeah, that's great. Yeah, that casket match, I'm sure it was good. Now, you were the one that won the casket match, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, well, that's
otherwise,
great.
Otherwise, you'd still be in a casket, John.
he would? Well, thanks a lot.
I'd be out there with a shovel and a flashlight.
that was a lot of help. All right, well, it looks like do we have John Strickland with us now?
Hey, what's happening, guys?
Hey,
what's
John,
up,
I have to apologize. Yeah, had a little bit of a technology problem. I got a new internet service today, and it's been a real learning experience all day, I'll tell you that. So sorry for the delay, but we're glad to have you. And Greg Bosa.
John, I told him he was hacked by the Russians.
Yeah, I didn't want you to tell everybody that, Greg Bo, and that's probably the truth, but because they didn't want everybody
to –
the cat really is out of the bag, yep. And so, John, Greg Bo told us that you have done a lot of catch-can wrestling, and what I wanted to do was get you on here, of course, with Greg Bo, his son, who's a wrestler, and Papa Stro Maestro, because he is our wrestling and MMA expert. So tell us a little bit about your experience with Catch as Catch Can and how all that has been going, and also some of the things that you've been doing in it. Tell us a little bit about it, if you don't mind, please.
Well, it's, as you probably are aware, it's kind of the grandfather of most wrestling, whether it's collegiate, folk-style high school, Greco-Roman, it's the grandfather of professional wrestling. You go back in
right.
The early 1900s, you have guys like Frank Gotch, who were world champion, who were catch-as-catch-can wrestlers, and then state common part for a very long time, even the guys from, Lou Thesz, Harold Gotch, Billy Wick, even the guys like Tom Billington, Dynamite Kid. I think he trained in Wigan. So it's been around for a long time, and I got interested in it as a kid. Greg and myself, we used to go to the professional wrestling matches in Greenville, and the first few times I went when I was really young with my grandfather, and I had a chance to meet Jack Briscoe, and kind of befriended him, where he would yell at me and tell me to quit running around the arena and stuff before I got hurt, that kind of thing. I had talked to him about wrestling, and I was always a smaller guy, so, even then I didn't think it'd be something that was in the cards for me, but he just you know, encouraged me and told me to get into amateur wrestling. There was it was called Island Recreation Center down in Hilton Head. We were living down there at the time, and I would go and train there, which was just simply like a club. And then when I got older, I stayed in martial arts, wrestled, wrestled for a very short period in college. And then when I got out, the UFC started. I saw some of the submissions and, you know, stuff I hadn't seen, you know. And so I started digging around, and I started hearing about guys like Lopez and Carl Gotch. And I originally had trained some with a guy by the name of Diesel Wilberto, who trained some with Yoshiki Fujiwara.
Ah, yeah, Fujiwara.
And then after my time with there, I discovered Billy Wicks in North Carolina. He was an old athletic show or carnival show wrestler. And he was trained by Henry Cullen. So that's kind of how I got started in it.
All right. And Greg Bo was telling us that you, was it fairly recently that you were in a catch-as-catch-can tournament. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was a single match. I probably was ill-advised at my age, and I've had 8 knee surgeries. And actually goes back to my right knee where Billy Wicks blew out my knee with a toe hold back in 2000. Wow. I've had a meniscus transplant, ACL, MCL, PCL, and I need a – they said the next step is either a high tibia osteotomy, which I can hardly pronounce. I don't even know if I pronounced it right. Or it looks like in a couple of years, probably a knee replacement. So anyway, I knew that. I went out to L.A. Originally, my top student was supposed to compete. it fell on his wedding date. I asked him if he could talk to his fiancée about changing the date. She went real cool about that. So, yeah, I know. I was pretty disturbed that he couldn't put wrestling first. But anyway, it is what it is. So I told the guy in Los Angeles, he goes, hey, I'm going to bring you and your coach out. And I was like, my coach can't travel. And I'm sitting here talking to Billy Wicks, and he didn't even go to his mailbox anymore. So, which, by the way, I had left out. Billy Wicks had introduced me to a gentleman named Dick Cardinal, who lives in Washington State, who used to train with a guy named August Sepp and Ben Sherman. I'd asked Dick, I said, hey, will you come corner me? He couldn't. He had some things going on, too. So the guy, the promoter, he said, you know, it was me plus one on the reservations and the flight. So I decided, why not take my wife as my corner at that point.
Good corner.
She had never been to California, so I kind of killed two birds with one stone there. And I went out there, and I finished tearing out the ACL in the match, and the match was stopped because of that. It was, I guess, no contest loss for me.
Wow. But you represented the estates very well, I got to say.
Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I had a double wrist lock on, and I probably tried to get I'm kind of like flashy endings. I was trying to hit a crooked head scissor with a wrist lock. And you've all seen this. Have you seen one of Luke Desmond matches? You've seen him do this where he
wrist-locks
the guy, drops back and throws him over, and then puts him in a head scissor.
Yep.
I did that very thing, and but I was my knee, I couldn't get around in time, and he turned out. And then he shot, and we turned off, and we went off the mat onto the floor. Ended up breaking 2 fingers, too, when I hit the floor. But
I didn't
realize that because of the paint, but until later that evening. So, yeah, it is what it is. You know, it was unfortunate. I don't think there's a person on earth that likes going out with a loss like that. But, I was 42, 43, I think.
Yeah.
So.
But it was honorable, though. Very honorable.
And that's it.
You can tell I'm proud.
Absolutely you are, because I guess from what little I know, Catch-as-Catch-Can was really the precursor to what we call professional wrestling today. Papa Stroh, what experience have you had with pure Catch-as-Catch-Can? Because I know you're an expert. You're really versed in wrestling. So,
well, I did some training with UWFI, which is Competitors of Pride Fighting in Japan. At the time, Gary Albright, Takada was the champion. Vader did a few fights. Ken Shamrock was with Pride, the opposing company at the time, and Dan Severn was the company I was with. And which, you know, Dan was, he's a student in Sambo and all different styles of wrestling, and we got up to spar some. And Luthes was kind of like a mentor to me earlier in my career. You know, it gave me some really good advice, and
wow,
it was it was such a pleasure to learn, to be in the learning tree from Luthes. And you know, he helped out a lot of people too. And Mark Fleming, I don't know if you remember the name Mark Fleming out of Virginia.
I did, Mark.
Yeah, great competitor and athlete. And then you had a guy that I worked with and wrestled with in WCW, Masahiro Chono of Japan, who also was on the tutelage of the great Luthes. So, he's what a vast knowledge of wrestling that he had. And meeting Billy Robinson for the first time, actually, it was a funny story. You know, I meet Billy Robinson for the first time, and across from me is Danny Hodge. You know, he like two of the toughest ever. You know, Danny Hodge, like he's got the tendon strength, he'll grab you, want to cry, crush apples and knock people out by grabbing them, you know. And Jim Cornette comes up to them and says, "Hey guys, guess what?" He points to me, he's a shooter, right? And they all get in their stance and like, "Oh my god, these guys are gonna kill me," right? But it was hilarious stuff. But I learned so much from, you know, both Danny, Mr. Hodge, and Mr. Robinson. I mean, Mr. Robinson, if you know anything about him, he's like an historian of wrestling. He'll take you back to the medieval times, you know, and how catch wrestling got to be where it is now, you know, and he'll take you on a journey when you listen to him. This is amazing, vast knowledge that he has. And Uncle Terry Funk told me some great, funny story one time about Billy Robinson when he came to the States. Because he put him up at his place in Texas, right? Working the Texas territory that his dad was running at the time, because I think his dad's helping out, and Joe Blanchard, Tully Blanchard's daddy at the time. And Billy, when he over way back where he's from, you know, he raised Dobermans, right? Doberman pinchers. And just so happens Terry had a Doberman pincher, right? And here Terry says it's funny. I'll try to do the best Terry Funk impersonation I can. Terry says, "You know what? I let Billy Robinson stay at my house and eat at my table, and I'll be doggone, he took my damn dog away from me."
Double cross.
Pretty spot on.
So that's a little funny story, but yeah, Billy Robinson, amazing man. Amazing man.
I knew a lot of guys that trained with Robinson. In fact, several of my close friends trained with Robinson, and I got one of my students trained with who Brett's worked with, Kenny Soever. He trained some time with Robinson, and I'm friends with the guys who run the Snake Pit now, and Wig and Roy Wood. And you know, a lot about them. And then of course Billy Scott, I don't know if you know him, he wrestled in UWFI.
Billy Scott, yeah, sure do.
Yeah, and so yeah, I mean, it's when you get in that world, I think it gets fairly, starts getting kind of small, you know. I mean, who's who, that kind of thing. So you still got a few of those guys running around. You got Les Thornton. I think he's still living.
Les Thornton, oh man. He was another guy I looked up to growing up, man. That guy was amazing.
And,
absolutely.
Is it Steve Wood? I think it's not Steve Wood. Steve, I think there is a Steve Wood, too. I think Roy's brother. But Steve, what's the guy? Had the Alex Wright and WCW's dad, Steve Wright.
Oh, yeah.
Steve Wright, yes.
Steve Wright trained in the Snake Pit in Wigan for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know them all on a personal level, but I just know that.
Yeah, I worked with Alex quite a bit in WCW. Yeah, great guy.
Yeah, I remember that time. Actually, that was
cool.
Probably about the end of when I started watching professional wrestling. It was kind of near the end of WCW's run. I would say about that time. So, yeah, I remember that. I remember his, you know, and you see some of these guys, and you're like, well, you know, I mean, you think he really, you know, and then you realize, like, you know, you see him get up there, what is he, DOS Wonder Kid or something, and doing, like, all these disco moves. And,
yeah, right.
you know,
that was a wild.
You know, yeah. And, you,
and those lime green shorts.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some guys, like I said, you know, that you look at them and they would have just screamed, "Oh, he looks pretty tough," you know. Well, a guy like Tom Billington, you know, you look at him,
right.
Look at the Dynamite Kid there, and you're going, "Yeah, okay, you're pretty intimidating," you know. So, and then there's those guys who you don't realize it, and there's still danger just walking everywhere. You know, I mean, you get a guy who,
oh yeah.
Oh, you know, and they don't realize that, you know, just I think the general, you know, the public is this perception, I think, unfortunately, today, that with the way everyone walked over kayfabe and stuff, that, well, you're a professional wrestler. And my coach, Billy Wick, said to me, he had a fan say at one time, which, by the way, he had a kind of a shoot with Antonio Inoki, and he shut him down, and Hiro Matsuda. But
Hiro, man, oh my God, one of the best.
He had a guy. Say to him, "Oh, you're a phony pro wrestler." And I call him Pop looks over at him, and he says, "Come grab a hold of me and find out how phony I am." You know, I always thought that was a great line.
Did you hear the story about Hulk Hogan and Hiro, where he goes to get trained by Hiro Matsuda, and Hogan had come in with like a bit of an attitude, right? So Matsuda breaks his leg and says, "Come back when you're more humble," right? And as soon as he got his leg healed up, and then he went back and, you know, a lot more humble, and, you know, he started training. But yeah, that was his first experience with Hiro Matsuda.
Wait a minute, Hogan with an attitude?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, never heard anything like that before.
Yeah, yeah, right.
If you consider the size of Hogan, I mean, how much bigger is he than Matsuda, you know? I mean, that's a big, big guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's
back then, he was huge, you know what I mean? Even bigger than he is now.
Well, it's funny,
yeah.
John, you were talking about, you know, the size and stuff of people and the intimidation factor. It's funny, you know, when I always love it when you get Brett up there in the gym and you've got some new guys and Brett comes walking in and he's kind of small guy, and you throw Brett in there on him.
Yeah, it's always like, you know, I think they see him. And I've said this before, one of the things that benefited Brett a lot was actually being as small as he was when he comes in, because, you know, it makes him realize, like, okay, I'm the smallest guy in here, I'm the youngest guy in here. I think it made him develop. I was telling this to somebody the other day. It kind of gave him an attitude. So when I have to watch him when he was, you know, he's working out with guys. I'm like, hey, you know, easy on that, you know, double wrist.
Whoa.
Easy on that front face lock.
Since when do I have an attitude?
You
forgot that I'm here.
Oh, are you? There you are. Okay. Yeah. Well,
you've been jumping in and talking so much.
Oh, I know, right? I was waiting for my name to drop, is what it was.
Well, your name has been dropped. You have been served. Yeah, you get him in there and he puts a hold on somebody, you know, he's going against a lot of, I'd say, older, you know, men. And I hear him cussing him out, you know, like, you know, which I won't say some of those words, but I hear some of these guys start screaming at him, "Come on, Brett, it's just practice. Take it easy. Don't run from that." He's throwing these front face locks on, and like I said, crippling and stuff. And my wife said to me in the room, she contested this. She backed me up. I said the other day, I put out a lot of video instructional, and I've had these MMA fighters and stuff that I train, and I get them in there, and I'm like, hey, I need you to let me demonstrate today for this part of this instructional. Oh, man, I really don't want to. I really don't feel like being beat up this weekend. I got plans. I don't want to be sore. And right. Brett's probably the only person I've ever had who did not complain about the holds I put him in. Now, that doesn't mean he wouldn't, you know, give up or yell, but he never wants to complain.
Yeah.
Which just made it kind of just a cold, tough, you know, just tough. Just take it. Just, I mean, I could hit him with anything if you take it. So,
yeah.
You can't, that's hard to find.
Try to get him to clean up his room. He'll complain.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, is that the room clean-up hold? That's what you put it in, Greg,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's the only devastating thing in his little world.
That's heat, brother. That's heat.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to go out there. You're not going to go out there and, you know, work cotton fields like Danny Hodge or, you know, get up 5 a.m. and run. But as far as just sheer grit, tough, they don't come any tougher than Brett. Really don't.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm not saying that just to make nice and put you over. I don't care about all that.
Oh, I know.
I'm just telling.
Oh,
saying that.
Oh, trust me. I know.
Okay.
We all know the story of the knitting needle.
Yeah.
Then we hear the siren in the background. Nice.
You mentioned the knitting needle, and here come the cops.
That's actually John's ride story. On the way right there.
Yeah,
right.
Armbar
the Papa Stroh starts talking, the cops show up.
Yep.
Yep.
Hello.
The Papa Stroh, I got a question for you. We watched Checkpoint.
Yes,
the other night.
Okay.
And it was a lot of fun. You were in that movie with Bill Goldberg and William Forsythe. It was just great. There were a couple of pretty solid wrestling scenes, weren't there?
Yeah, quite a bit. Gee, I wonder who choreographed that.
I couldn't. It looked like Bill Goldberg might have been the choreographer there, you know?
Or someone that may be on the show right now as we speak.
Okay.
Oh my goodness. Speaking of size,
really good.
You know, you mentioned about size differences and everything. One of the first UWF fights I saw was Vader and Takata, Japanese champion, right?
Oh wow.
And Vader had, you know, definitely had the size advantage, right? And I'm thinking, wow, this should be something, right? No,
it wouldn't even like 2 minutes, man. Takata had him in a cross arm breaker, and Big Vader was tapping.
It was crazy. Unbelievable, right? And speaking of Goldberg,
wild.
I know you heard of the I don't know if you guys heard of the backstage fight he had with Chris Jericho a while back, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, see, wait. You know, now, don't get me wrong. Goldberg's tough. You know, he did the Sambo. You know, he's still training in MMA, you know, with his, you know, physical training. But Jericho, you know, he came from the dungeon, you know, Stu Hart, which was good friends with one of my trainers, Nelson Royal. That's how I got him at the Hart family.
Yep.
And if you know anything about Stu, he was right up there with Matt Suda and, you know, some of the toughest hookers and shooters out there, you know. And, I guess the story was that Goldberg went for him, right, and Jericho put him in that front face lock. You know, and they brought him down. You know what I mean? And, you know, which he learned from Stu. So, I mean, like I said, you know, it's especially when it comes to defending yourself, you know, size isn't necessarily, you know, the case. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, you know, to have the right knowledge of defending yourself and all, I mean, anybody can be taken down, you know?
Well, that's 100% right. And you're talking about that with Jericho. And I used to call that the front face lock that was heard around the world.
Right.
Well, you mentioned Stu Hart, you know, and you were talking about Billy Robinson earlier. Here's a little, I don't know, small but interesting point in case nobody knows about it. Stu Hart's grandson, Harry Smith, which is the son of Davey Boy Smith, he trained with Billy Robinson and trains in Catch-as-Catch-Can. And to my understanding, still to this date, so.
That's awesome.
Well, that's pretty
interesting. Harry's a good dude. Harry's a really nice dude.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about him.
You know, they also, I was thinking about, you know, you see a lot of these guys go over, and obviously in Japan they like to test people a lot of times, from what I've been told, you know. And I saw a match the other night I was watching, and I just pulled it off YouTube, but it was Bob Backlund, had a real good amateur career, former World, Wrestling Federation Heavyweight Champion. He's over there wrestling with a guy named Masa Funaki, who was a big guy in Pancrase, and I thought they were going to kill each other. I mean, it was great. I loved it.
That's Japan. Bob stays in incredible shape, man. He's still in incredible shape.
That's wild. I think he was doing some kind of challenges, you know, kind of like the old athletic shows where they're taking all commerce.
Right.
I don't know if anybody remembers Mr. Wrestling number one, Tim Wood.
Tim Woods, yeah.
You know, he was doing stuff, and still, I think up into the 70s or 80s, down in Macon, Georgia, they were had a little angle where they were taking people out of the crowd, and one night some guy had came up, and apparently just a real rough, tough guy, brawler type, been in and out of prison his whole life, and he bit part of Tim's finger off.
Oh.
I think he actually got arrested for it. They were like, yeah, it's not part of wrestling, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
Let me understand the rules. Submission or pin? Okay, well, just bite your finger off camera submission. Well, yes, but unfortunately, it's the soft battery, too. I mean, you know, I can't imagine getting my finger bit off. I can tell you this, though, that Pops used to talk to Tim Wood was tough. Said he would have snapped that guy in half had he not been focused on losing a finger, you know.
I'd rather be hit square in the face than get caught in the wrong hold, you know.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Because some of those can just be nasty.
Now
you brought up a great name, Tim Woods. Is he still around, or whatever happened to him after he quit his active career in wrestling? Stro, you probably know.
I don't know.
I'm not quite sure, you know, in detail what he did afterwards, but I mean, I didn't know when he was around. He was, I mean, every bit of a legend. I mean, as far as mass wrestlers in the United States, I mean, he really paved the way, you know.
Absolutely.
Oh, most definitely.
And you don't see him at any of these shows that you go to where they have wrestlers doing fan days. You don't see Tim Woods around anymore. I would doubt. Do you?
I think he has, hasn't he?
I believe so. If I'm not mistaken,
I think he had passed away. I know Mr. Wrestling number two was still living.
Right.
That's a guy who trained under one of my coaches, one of his coaches, a guy named old school shooter named Tony Morelli.
Morelli,
he had worked with, and of course he'd also worked Joe Pazendak. I don't know if you guys are aware of that name. Old tough shooter. He used to do a thing out in Los Angeles called Beat the Champ, where he would take on all comers, and they put him in a match with Johnny Valentine. And Pops told me, he said, you know, when I knew he was going against Johnny Valentine, they'd already made a mistake, because Johnny wasn't going to go out there and beat him in a wrestling match. That wasn't going to happen.
No.
Joe Pazendak trained George Gordienko, so he just wasn't going to go out there and beat him, and trained Vern Gagne. But he said,
Vern.
The bell rang, and he went the way I thought, son. He goes, Valentine ran across the ring and punched him, and split his eye open so bad he couldn't continue. He said, I talked to Joe afterwards, and I said, Joe, what on earth made you want to get in a shoot situation with Johnny Valentine? He's not going to wrestle you. He's going to fight you. You know? So But
hey, did you hear about the time that Vern Gagne body slammed a guy in a nursing home?
Yes.
that was epic.
That just blew my mind. Even in the wrestling home, he's still working it, man. Goodness.
And I think he killed the guy. If I recall correctly, because they did, because the authorities out there decided not to press charges on him at the time.
Wow.
And rightfully so. You know, I think he was, gosh, I think he was like 90.
He had them in by then.
Yeah.
But I think the guy had came up and started some stuff with Vern and, whatever.
Ring the bell.
There's always that person. Oh, I don't think you're that good. Well, it's hard to say. Grab a hold of me and find out. I guess that's what happened there.
I remember Stro, I was telling you part of this story at a con. I was doing karaoke with, of all people, Johnny Weaver. As guys
Johnny
came
Weaver,
over to
yes.
the table. Yeah, I told you the karaoke part, but I don't think I mentioned because we were so covered up that day. Is we're sitting at the table later, and these guys came up and they had a couple of drinks in them and recognized Johnny Weaver. And at first they were just all, like being real quiet and everything. And then they just started getting almost to the point where they were wanting to test him. And by this point, Johnny had an age on him, but they didn't want to get in over Johnny Weaver.
Right. No doubt.
But he just real polite. He's wearing his glasses, and he looks at him, pulls his glasses down with one finger and kind of looks at him. Didn't even get up from the table. And he said, "That's enough now. I've given you an autograph. Go away." They shut up, walked off.
All right, guys, doing a little research side while the stories are going on. Tim Woods, whose real name was George Burrell Wooden, after wrestling, retired from professional wrestling in 1983 and went into the heating and air business, no less. Avid collector of motorcycles, accomplished photographer and saxophone player, passed away November 30th of 2002 from a heart attack in his home in Charlotte, North Carolina at the age of 68.
Wow.
There's it. Yeah, but he was one of the original guys that, for those of us who broke in with the Mid-Atlantic Wrestling, when Crockett was holding all of that, Mr. Wrestling was one of the, him was the Masked Superstar, were the two guys that were I know the Assassins were going in Florida, and then, of course, he had Mil Máscaras in the WWF. We actually had three W's back in those days, but yeah, I remember
old school.
I got to see him and Mr. Wrestling 2 tag up and fight at a high school in down there in Paris Island when we lived down there. So, yeah,
must have been a treat. Wow.
Yeah,
man, the Crockett days. Those were the best.
No
Absolutely.
Doubt.
Absolutely,
they really were.
Great era. I was going to say about Tim Woods. Can you imagine him doing the photography thing like Rodney Dangerfield did in Easy Money? Doing for kids, trying to get them to calm down. Oh man,
we need some wallet size. This kid ain't gonna fit in a wallet size. Yeah.
I would love to be a fly on a wall for that one. Oh my god.
I don't understand why that movie never won an Oscar. That was fantastic.
incredible.
I think the Crockett days, and I guess when Barnett had towards a championship.
Barnett.
I grew up watching, and I tell you, when you watch, all I can say is I am so just thankful for the internet, because without it, a couple of VHS tapes, who's got a VCR anymore, right? And it probably wouldn't work on my storage anyway. And to be able to go on and see somebody else loves Georgia Championship Wrestling pretty much nightly. And, to see matches, you see this ring, it's not a big ring in front of this small crowd. And it's like I told Greg Moe, I said, the matches are still better than Saturday night's main event. I'm sorry, but they just were.
I'm watching Buzz Sawyer the other night. Him and Tommy Rich just kill each other, put on a heck of a show.
Oh, man, what a few days.
Just on TV, you know, just the regular TV show. And
well,
of course, the one you...
Oh, yeah. Piper. I loved Piper. I'm just going to say it. That was my
dude.
Oh,
Piper?
Yeah, Roddy Piper, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he sent me another one. Go ahead.
Good. No, I was going to say, he broke on the scene there towards the end with the Mid-Atlantic thing, because he had a big go-around there for a while with Flair and Wahoo and Steamboat and all those. I mean, they beat the daylights out. Because if I remember right, he even got Abdullah the Butcher hired in. And they had this big feud going with Wahoo. And, you know, Abdullah the Butcher, for crying out loud, that guy just wasn't human.
Oh, man.
I had a great little video the other day with Popper, and it was just a little 20-minute clip. You know, but he's sitting here working out, and he comes out and starts having heat with Jack Briscoe, and Popper grabs a microphone, and Popper calls him, I guess I can say this on here, I hope, calls him a trash can Indian.
Oh, wow.
Jack had to be okay with it. I mean, Jack was Native American, you know, but he says that to Jack, and Jack takes the shoe off and throws it at Popper and hits him in the head from halfway across the arena. It was a dress shoe. You know it had to hurt. I mean, my gosh. And they did. They commenced to beating the hell out of each other for the last 10 minutes of the TV taping. It was great. I loved it. The Popper, was there a better person on the mic back in the day than Roddy Popper?
Oh, he was amazing.
No.
Yeah, he was
so high strung, you know.
Remember that Madman story I told you, Dr. John?
Yes,
told me.
My favorite wrestling story of all time about Madman. Well, tell everybody about that.
Oh, man.
That.
Oh, you want me to? Okay, all right. Well, here
yes,
we go.
Yes, I did.
I can't do Roddy justice because, I mean, he's hilarious when he tells stories like this. He's amazing. But
even the dog's popping in the background. That's awesome.
Well, okay. Right. Roddy Piper told me a story about back in the 70s where they had Pacific Northwest Territory out in Oregon, right? Sandy Barr was the promoter. And they were going to do this deal for live TV back then, which Al Madrill was their top heel at the time. If you guys remember Al Madrill from World Class Championship Wrestling.
But
the commentator was going to interview him at ringside, and here comes this new guy they're going to debut called Mattman, who dressed up like Batman, but due to DC comic book rights, they had to call him Mattman. But he had still had the Batman outfit, the cape, and everything, right?
No.
The deal was he was going to jump on top of the table when he does the interview with Al Madrill and says, "I'm Mattman," right? Like a superhero. But keep in mind, this is 1970-something, I guess 1975 or so, TV. It's live TV, no editing. So if you screw up, you know, oh well, right? So the TV show starts. Al Madrill is being interviewed by the commentator, ringside. Here comes Mattman running down the aisle. Jumps on top of the table, slips, falls, busts his rear end on the floor. But he's like howling in tears, laughing, right? And the commentator and Amadeo look at each other, and the commentator takes the microphone down to Mattman, who's all messed up on the floor, and he says, "Who are you?" He puts the microphone down to Mattman, and Mattman's all messed up, looking in the light, says, "I'm Mattman. Tell all your friends," right? and then later on is the debut match of Mattman, right? So here comes Mattman running into the ring with the Batman outfit and the cape on all, right? Starts the match, boom-de-boom, slams the guy, climbs the top rope, extends his hands like he's going to give him a Jimmy Superfly Snuka splash. But what he doesn't realize, there's loose wires protruding from the top of the ceiling there at the studio, right? And when one of his hands touched those wires, sparks flew, blacks out the whole joint. No? And then, like, a few seconds later, the lights come back on. And here's this smoking Mat Man on the top rope. Falls face first to the canvas like a dead tree. Boom, right? Missed the guy like a mile in the ring. And the referee doesn't know what the heck to do, right? So he takes the smoking Mat Man, puts him on top of the guy, and then counts one, two, three.
Nice.
I was like the beginning the legend of Mat Man, basically.
Oh, that's great.
Well, what was one guy?
He takes the credit.
With
though.
The Stormtrooper mask that came out. God, what was it?
The Shockmaster?
That was hilarious. I mean, you want to talk about just, you know, they talk about 15 minutes of fame. He didn't even get 15 seconds. I mean, just. He's wearing, I mean, they've got this whole mask block. Yeah, and it's all spray painted silver. The guy can't see where he's walking. They might as well have a pillowcase on his head, you know?
It was a Star Wars Stormtrooper mask that had been bedazzled, okay? And what happened was earlier that day, you know, they were planning the whole introduction of the Shockmaster, and they had set up the a wall there and had taken one of the 2x4s out so that he could get through it a lot easier. But one of the guys backstage noticed the 2x4 was gone and wasn't in on it, so he went and fixed it. And so he goes busting through and hits that thing, and he goes through, you know, face first, and the mask rolls
like
off.
On the spot.
Yeah, but let me tell y'all something really funny. So I'm in a comic book shop. This is like 4 or 5 months ago, right? And in the comic book shops, they have a lot of action figures, and a lot of those are the, you know, the WWE Legends figures and stuff like that. So I'm walking through looking, and there's this one figure in a package that was a Comic-Con exclusive, and he's upside down. I pick it up, lo and behold, it's the Shockmaster.
Yeah.
Upside down like he landed on TV with his helmet down in the
little
corner.
Yes. For a second, I thought you were going to say it was a Stricker dust. I've just got to be honest. I thought a Stricker dust was coming out of that story.
Well, that was a good reel if I pulled on you.
Did you hear Dusty talk about that? Did you guys hear Dusty talk about that? Where he's saying he said Fred, you know, gets back in the gorilla position, and he said. You know, I messed this up, didn't I? And Dusty's like, baby, I laughed so hard, baby. They had to take me to my room. I couldn't move, baby. I was laughing so hard.
Did you hear what he said? Did you hear what he said about his kid at home? You know, I don't know. I guess it was either Cody or Dustin who was at home. That's Uncle Fred.
Uncle Fred.
Let me tell y'all something funny. You know, we were talking about Piper a minute ago, right? And this is a story I heard Piper tell about himself one time. And I don't know where he was at. I mean, you know, he's up there wrestling around. You know, it was like some of his first – I mean, he was new to the business. And I can't remember who it was he said ribbed him. But they had it set up. It was this lumberjack camp. Because, you know, back in Piper's early days, he wrestled up through Canada and Portland and all that. So he was in a lumberjack camp in the middle of nowhere. And they were running the show. And they had this trained bear. Have y'all heard this story?
Wow.
Okay. No. They had this trained bear, you know. And the bear was all, you know, trussed up, you know. They advertised, oh,
right.
Roddy Piper's going to be wrestling a bear.
Hey, hold that thought just for a second. Hold this thought.
Yeah.
Now, just back up. What you just said, Piper and a bear.
Yeah.
How else could this not go crazy, right? I mean.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
See nothing unusual about that.
Yeah, right. He's telling the story, and he's behind the curtain, you know, in the gorilla position. And before he goes out, this old timer comes up to him and just smacks him on the butt before he goes out to the ring, right? And Piper said, "Man, I just was so weirded out by that because it was like this old timer was copping a feel, you know." And he goes, man, he had his hand on my butt for a few minutes before I walked out of that curtain. He goes, that's all I could think about when I walked out there. But what I didn't know is the old-timer had smeared his hand with, like, honey or some kind of sauce or something that was back there. So Piper gets out. The bear smells the food and goes after Piper's tights.
couldn't get away, and the bear took his tights off of him, and he had to run to the back naked.
Oh, wow.
And that old timer was just sitting there just laughing.
I remember when Piper first broke on. He came on the interview, and this was Georgia wrestling, if I remember right, because Gordon Solie made the whole thing happen. And Piper came out there playing the bagpipes, and you know how Piper would get so wound up and just get totally off track of what he was talking about. And he's turning beat red in the face, and I mean, he just carries on without taking a breath for a good 2 minutes, and he walks off, and then Gordon Solie just takes the mic and looks at the camera and goes, "Indeed."
Indeed.
Hey, Greg Bo, have you told them about what happened when we were kids with the baby doll incident?
No, I'll let you tell that story. That was pretty good.
Well, I think we'll leave out a name just to
for the sake of our
friend. But this is, of course, back in the 80s, and, you know,
I think we went for my birthday.
I don't remember what it was for. I just remember this event happening. And it's one of those things that's unforgettable. You'll never forget it. But so we're at Monday night, Greenville Memorial Auditorium, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. And this has had to be back, I guess, in the mid-80s sometime. This was when early to mid-80s when Tully Blanchard had Baby Doll doing that. And it was the last match of the evening. And they were already turning on the lights in the arena trying to get people out. Well, I don't remember who Blanchard was fighting with. It might have been Rhodes. But it poured on out to the audience and the crowd, and people are trying to walk by to get out the exit ramps, and they're fighting. So one of our friends is with us, and I mean, we couldn't have been but about 11 or 12 years old. He decides he wants to get involved in professional wrestling.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so he decides his Baby Doll and Tully are beating up Rhodes, you know, in Rhodes' face. He's going to jump in and help Rhodes. So he spits in their direction.
Oh no.
Well,
oh, yeah.
And I'm talking, we were at the most 12 years old. Baby Doll turns around, rears back, and she smacked the living hell out of him.
You can hear it over the crowd.
Had a handprint on his face the next day at school still.
Oh,
it was so crazy. As kids, you know, you're telling other kids this, and they just don't believe you. Like, oh, no way. Like, man, I honestly, I mean, after she slapped him, I try to find the nearest exit ramp. It's like, I don't want a part of this.
I was ashamed, man. It was bad. You could hear it over the crowd.
That
reverberated through the auditorium.
And I remember when I told Billy Wicks about that, because he'd always told me, go, oh, no, you better not mess up the crowds. You know, you can get yourself in promotion in trouble. And I told him about it, and he goes, well, it served him right, and he's keep his hands to himself. You know.
I bet he never did it again.
Well, I think after that we all kind of, you know, took a step back. I mean, Ricky Morton and I did have those words that one night, which is kind of unforgettable.
I love
too.
Ricky.
And I'm sitting here going, he's actually calling me up to the ring. You know?
And John was 12. John had to be like 12. And John, you know, back then the Rock and Roll Express, all the girls are, you know, just going nuts. And John was just getting aggravated. So Ricky got up on the rope and challenged all, you know, oh, you don't like your girls screaming for us? Y'all just come right down to the ring. And here comes the only one that would go. Here comes John marching down there 12 years old. And I'm like, get back in your seat.
Yeah, you know, and I think as a kid I must have been, you know, you look and you've seen Hulk and Animal walk out, the Barbarian. And
yeah,
I don't think, well, he's not that big, and I think I can go out there and I think I'm putting him in a cradle and pin him. you know, and
I don't know about that.
Good luck with that.
You know, I mean, and you sit back and you think about it going, how did I survive childhood? I mean,
And Ricky, you know, getting to know him later, he is one of the coolest guys, too.
I got to say, Barbarian, Stroh and Barbarian had a match. It was a couple of weeks ago in Kinston, North Carolina. They were in the ring when the match was announced, and that was it. They wrestled in the entire arena, and I think Stroh, you got back in the ring to do the pinfall, right? It was incredible.
Oh,
I heard it
went
was
everywhere.
A hell of a show.
I mean, that was our typical match. We go all over the place, no matter what type of match we've had through the years. It's always a rodeo ride with Barbarian.
Yeah, it was like all over. It was like, you know, it was great. Stroh like holds the Barbarian and he baits one of the guys in the audience, hit him. And so the guy finally hit the Barbarian and Stroh was holding him. It was like pure classic. There was nothing like that. No one's ever seen anything like that in Kinston. It was so great to see all that. I just had to mention it. It was Stroh. That was a match unlike any I've ever seen in small town wrestling. They were treated to true Madison Square Garden. That's all that was.
Yeah, I heard that. I didn't get to see it. I heard it was amazing.
I think I may have some photos of that. I might have to. I'll post those on Comic-Con Stars because I think I'm.
I hope you do.
Tried to take a couple pictures. Yeah. No, it was really great. No, it was wonderful. Yeah, so these have been some great stories about what wrestling is all about as it came out of Catch-as-Catch-Can and as it moved into what we have today. I think people today don't realize what a wonderful life we had back in the 70s and 80s watching.
Amen.
These great stars.
Oh, yeah.
And
easy.
And Stroh, your phrase, if you would clarify a little bit about this, you talk about tendon strength. Remind us about tendon strength because I love that. I love that story.
Which story was that?
The story at the barn, and the truck driver with the Anderson brothers.
Oh, okay, all right. So I'm at Nelson Royals. Western store, right? There are Moore's outside of Charlotte, you know. I used to commute between Nelson, the Andersons, and Ivan Koloff, you know, when I was being brought into business. And I was hanging at Nelson's store because there's a pair of cowboy boots I really wanted really bad, right? And he had an awesome collection. And this truck driver walks in, right? And says, this big old fat truck driver says, I want a piece of the Andersons, right? And the look on Nelson's face, he got wide eyes, like, oh, really? And he said, yeah, I want a piece of them right now, right? And Nelson's looking at me, kind of have a smirk on his face, and said, we told him that they're uphill, the barn, training, you know what I mean? So he goes out the door, he pulls the truck up the hill, the barn, and like, we're just like, Nelson and I looking at each other like going, okay, this will be interesting, right? A few hours later, he comes back to the door, drops, collapses to the ground, all mangled up, right? Some lady says, somebody call 911, right? and it turned out, the story was that as soon as he got to the barn and walked through the door and everything, they just snatched him in the ring and they didn't throw one punch. They just elbowed him, kneed him, just stretched him, like, all over the place. And we had to help him get back in his truck because he couldn't walk.
Well, you know what's funny about the Andersons, though, is that, you know, me and my brother, we were, you know, kids. You know, we're 4 years apart, so, of course, we were always in the bedroom slamming one another on, you know, on the bed and all that kind of jazz until, you know, Dad would come in there and y'all knock it off, you know. Well, never saw the Andersons until – because they weren't in the – they were doing more of the, if I remember right, the AWA stuff. And then they filtered down the Mid-Atlantic later on. And they had that put your arm behind the back and body slammed you with your arm behind your back.
And, oh, that was no fun, right?
Yeah.
So, of course, you know, I slammed my brother with his arm behind his back, and next thing you know, his arm was altered. I'm like, dude, uh-oh, you know?
Oh, my word.
So we didn't
it was
that
like a hammer lock.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
we were in Savannah, Georgia one night, and I can't remember who it was that Gene Anderson was managing. If you guys remember Gene Anderson, he used to walk up there with a cane.
Oh, of course.
Who was he? Was it, was it Ole and, maybe it was Ole and Arn that he was managing at the time. But
was it
Ole anyhow,
and Thunderbolt Patterson?
That might have been it, because probably
right
around
that, right?
80.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Didn't Stan Hansen tag with Ole for a while?
Yep,
sure
Stan Hansen.
Georgia.
Yep. Yeah. Well, Gene is sitting in a chair right at the corner, and he's like almost like a corner man in a boxing match, and somebody threw a wadded up cup at him and him right between the running lights, right? That guy didn't flinch. He didn't move. He didn't wink. He didn't turn around and look. It was like he was totally asleep. I mean, that cup bounced right off of his face, and it was like he might as well have been throwing that thing at the Statue of Liberty. And it was hilarious because, you know, I'm a kid, and I'm looking up there, and, you know, I'm going, man, he didn't even flinch. You know, it was like all of a sudden Gene Anderson was like totally over the top bad guy because he could take a cup shot in the face and not even flinch. He was probably sound asleep,
Gene, man.
He was getting up in the years.
Gene was like, you know, he'd sit there and help us with the training. He'd sit there with like Bojangles chicken and Diet Pepsi and just like calm as can be. And he wants to be aggressive. Like, you know, when he would show me the sugar hold and all that, he was willing to really crank it in. I would get as fired up as I could because I knew if I didn't, I didn't want Gene coming there stretching me. So I know I better be on my A game, you know what I mean? And I've seen Gene, like, take guys three times his size. Like, he'll grab a finger and bring them to their knees. They're crying like babies because he had what you call tendon strength. Pretty much what William Regal, a good friend of mine, has. He has the same deal, you know. And I've seen Regal. I've told some stories here, I think, on the show even, where Regal done some astronomical stuff just because people just underestimated how tough he really is, right? And, But Cowboy Bob Orton Jr. had the same deal. Randy Orton's daddy, he had the tendon strength. I've seen him pick up like Hulk Hogan in his prime over his head and drop him to a backbreaker. And back when Hogan, you know, was at his peak. And you know, those guys, you know, that's why mountain climbers can like balance themselves on cliffs with just a couple of fingers because they have that grip, man. You want to cry when they grab you.
Well, you know, the
Danny Hodge.
We were talking earlier about the old hook wrestlers, the old catch wrestlers back in the early 1900s, mid-1900s and up, you know, I guess, up until, gosh, I don't know, after World War II or sometime. A lot of these guys also trained in gymnastics. Billy Wicks trained in gymnastics. Greg Peterson did. Gosh, man, just a slew of guys to build that kind of tendon strength. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's amazing, like you just said about Danny Hodge. I mean, Danny Hodge was not a big man.
Right.
You know, he's not good. He doesn't walk out like the Warlord. You know, people think, oh, he can break tires. He's got to be huge. So I'm like, you know, he looks like somebody's grandfather. You go up and shake his hand, and, they, you know, how many submission holds does he know? It don't matter if he can break your arm when he grabs it just by shaking it.
How many different ways can you break it? Yeah.
That's a great statement.
He could just put you on your
knees. It's all of us, you know, we're sitting here talking about all these old, wonderful stories from the 70s and 80s and even beyond. And it's like, you know, I see Junior some nights, you know, if he walks in the locker room, and I've seen him walk in with, like, an Ole and Gene Anderson T-shirt on, right, with the two of them on there. And what is it, Junior? What, like 9/10 of the locker room doesn't know who they are?
Yeah, sadly.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah, everyone. Cool. My wrestling, watching it on TV, kind of ended with the Mid-Atlantic, because my dad always showed me those videos. as opposed to the WWE. So I grew up with those while other people coming in around the same time as I am are getting into it with the WWE, so they don't know the history behind it. So,
well, it always seemed like the Crockett promoted stuff in Florida and Georgia always was more into wrestling, whereas the WWE always seemed to be more about showmanship.
And yeah, agreed.
Yeah, and almost like character, yeah, based things where, you know, everybody, and as a matter of fact, that was one of the things that I feel kind of hosed up the WCW guys that migrated to the WWF there in the early 90s is, you know, like Tully and Arn. I mean, when they were in WCW, I mean, those guys. And, I mean, you talk the 80s. There they are in their hairy chest, the whole nine yards, wearing the little boots and the, you know, the tighties and everything. They go into the WWF, and now they're not Tully and Arn. Now they're the Brainbusters.
Yeah, we were talking about that just the other day, John and I.
Well, how about Terry Taylor?
It just
kind of
took away. Yeah, perfect example. You know, Terry Taylor fought for years in Florida and, you know, fantastic wrestler. And next thing you know, he's dressed up like a chicken, you know.
I hate to laugh, but, I mean, you know, because it's so bad. I mean, that just destroyed his career.
Well, didn't they want to make Ric Flair like the Gladiator? Wasn't that the
bad
thing?
Yeah, they
wanted
to shave his head.
Yeah.
Shave his head and stuff.
Thanks, good old Jim Herd, the pizza man.
Boy, I hope he can make it better. He could run a wrestling business.
There's actually a DVD out there, a DVD set called The Fall of WCW, and I don't know how much of it to take for actual fact, because, of course, it is produced by the WWE, so, of course, I'm sure Vince is going to put his twist on it and everything. But
yeah,
it really is, when you read up on that stuff and you hear about it, the Crocketts had such a pure down-home grassroots type of operation. And then, of course, Ted Turner infiltrated to it, and then Vince got in on it, and it just almost like messed up a good thing. It's sometimes when you eat at your favorite restaurant and it's like a little, you know, country restaurant, you go in there and you eat for years, and the guy who runs it decides to retire, and they sell it to somebody else, and they still have his name on the front of the building, but you go in there and the food's different.
So true.
It was kind of the same way, and I feel that's where a lot of these WCW guys, they were pure wrestlers. They weren't showmen. They weren't circus acts. They were pure wrestlers. And, you know, and even if you look at the WWF, the guys who had the technical skills that actually wrestled, those were the ones that didn't get a whole lot of show. Now, if you start, you know.
They never did get a push, a lot of them.
No, they didn't. Absolutely
not. You can even go back, and this might offend people, and if it is, you know, I don't mean to be offensive by it, but it's just from what I've been told, and I consider the sources that told me very credible. But it goes back to the days of putting, you know, Buddy Rogers and then going into Bruno Sammartino. And, you know, there was an argument, I guess it was back in the 60s or 70s, between Bruno Sammartino wrestling Lou Thesz, who was the world champion. And I know Bruno Sammartino was a big, strong, tough guy, but I tell you what, I think Lou Thesz would have taken him apart.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
You know.
Yeah.
And that's you know, ever since then, now again, they, you know, Vince did, I mean, in that, not, you know, knock on WWF, but they did. I mean, they had some great talent. I mean, yeah, guys, Bob Backlund, like we said earlier, could wrestle. Iron Sheik could wrestle. Of course, Iron Sheik was up with Vern Gagne and Billy Robinson in that camp, and he had a pretty tough come out of there. you know, he's had good wrestlers. They just make them, he became cartoonish in a way.
Exactly.
I got to give it to Bruno, though.
Yep.
I got to give it to Bruno Sammartino. I mean, he was one tough cat, man. And to this day, the man still jogs like 6 to 8 miles a day. It's
wow.
Incredible.
How old is he now?
Classic guy, too. Real classic guy.
He has to be in
his
80s, doesn't he, Strode?
Oh, yeah, he's right up there. But, I mean, for his age, he's still in amazing shape. It's just incredible.
I think that was you know, that those guys, I think the WWF had that time when, at least when I was growing up, you know, you would see, you know, the guys would, you know, who were the champions. I mean, when then Hogan came around, and they wanted to keep, I think, you know, Vince had this idea of keeping the titles on the faces, where, you know, I think Crockett liked keeping titles on the heels.
Yeah.
And,
right.
You know, when you look back at his matches, and I remember the first WWF match I went to, I was in 10th grade, and it was such a contrast to what I was used to going to. There was no blood, which was unusual, because, I mean, if you're going to wrestle in the 80s down south, you're going to bleed.
Right.
Yeah. I think the show, it was in Hickory, North Carolina, and you know, it was just complete opposite. I mean, I'm used to watching, you know, Ric Flair, Roddy Piper, Greg Valentine, Wahoo McDaniel just, you know, lose a pint of blood a night, you know, and you get in there and you see this, and it's, again, nothing against their athletes. I don't have anything against their wrestlers. I don't like the way they did their shows. And, you know, I say let the guys get in there and let the wrestling be in the ring, you know. I don't care about the gimmicks and the side distraction. Let's just get in the ring and let's go. Let's see the wrestling action.
And go at it, yeah. And put the tables and the ladders away. Let's get in there and have some collar and elbows and a few arm bars and maybe even a front chancery. But, you know, it does. It gets over the top. And I remember there when towards the end of the WCW thing when they blended Hogan into the WCW, which I didn't like because they immediately pushed him right there in front of Flair, who to me is the greatest one of all time. They had Hogan fighting one of the luchadors one night. And those luchadors, you got to hand it to those guys. Their timing, their athleticism. I mean, if you watch that Lucha Underground, those guys were absolutely
– yeah.
They've got to have some type of mental issues because ain't nobody needs to throw themselves around like that. But
absolutely.
He was,
yeah, I get it.
Yeah, he was fighting these guys, and, I mean, he was so off. And it was always like they were three moves ahead of him. And, you know, I'm watching it the whole time. I'm just, you know, I got my beer and I'm watching it and just rolling. I'm calling my buddies up going, you see this? It's the fact that, you know, that's where the technical side of things was out. You know what I mean? And when you get into this whole, you know, and I think the WWF lost it all when the Cyndi Lauper and Mr. T thing hit. You know, that they, when you have to actually, you know, go in there and wrestle, you actually have to wrestle. He was horrible. So, you know, when the argument starts between Flair and Hogan, who was the greatest, you know, Hogan had the biggest showmanship, but Flair was, hands down, the greatest. Still is.
Well, I think you let Mr. T do that. It's a slap to the guys who paid their dues. It's a slap to the guys who actually know how to wrestle, who grew up wrestling, who have, you know, learned their art, and they go in there and they have to, you know, I mean, WCW started doing it with, I mean, who was it? Was it Jay Leno? Did they put the title on Jay Leno? Am I wrong?
Yeah, it
I
was Arquette, too. David Arquette?
Yeah, David Arquette.
I remember right.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous.
Oh, my God. That's why I left.
You know, we're
seriously, that's why
we're,
I left.
I
got something to title on him. I was like, it ain't no sense me sticking around. So as soon as my contract is up,
please.
See ya.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Well, I'll tell you.
And Arquette was a nice guy, too. It wasn't his fault. It was just the office. You know what I mean?
Well, sure.
Because he donated his money that he made from WCW to charity, actually, which I thought was pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is cool.
That is.
That was awesome.
You know,
we were
talking about Flair a minute ago, and, you know, Flair and Hogan, and who was the greatest of all time, and I hear all kind of stuff like that. I always look at Flair, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but I look at Flair this way. If you take any single thing that Ric Flair would be great for, there was probably one other person or two or three other people that did it better. But I don't think anybody in all of wrestling did everything as well as Flair. You know? I mean, it's like,
oh yeah,
Flair could talk on the mic. He could work in the ring. He could, you know, work a crowd. I mean, there's just so many different things. Flair could do across the board. So I have no arguments with, you know.
And unlike Hogan, you know, he never had a problem with putting somebody over, which I admire.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because
you created stars.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and you know, everywhere Hogan went,
it
was about Hogan.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Kevin Sullivan said it best. You know, Ric Flair was like the Mickey Mantle of wrestling.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great. Yeah. That's a great analogy.
It's a perfect statement.
I've heard too many guys.
Really
I've heard too many. I hear so many guys will say today, you know, they'll get on there or they'll get, whether it's on YouTube or other podcasts or interviews, and they'll say, if you've seen one Ric Flair match, you've seen them all. He's a one-trick pony. Well, my response to that, and Greg Bowen and I have talked about this before, everybody does their thing. If you've seen me wrestle somebody, you've seen me wrestle. You know, I mean, everybody has their style, the way they do things. I don't care if it's in football, baseball, basketball, wrestling, boxing. You know, have you seen one Muhammad Ali fight? You've seen them all. Have you seen one Mike Tyson fight? You've seen them all. I think that's really insulting probably a lot of jealous people. Because, you know, if you look at the matches Flair did, and I can tell you, I countless of matches I watched front row in the 70s and 80s, and I mean, he's going 60 minutes with Ricky Steamboat, and I mean,
oh, yeah.
You know, they're putting on a hell of a
Flair Steamboat. Yeah, those were the days. Well, you don't see that anymore. You don't see a lot of these guys that Vince pushes, you know, pretty hard. Even nowadays, I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. A lot of them probably in really good shape and everything, but I mean, traveling throughout the Mid-Atlantic, wrestling every night of the week, 60-minute matches. I mean, that's up there, guys.
Right, and those guys used to drive. You know, the flying stuff and all that. As a matter of fact, you've read I don't know if any of you guys read the Bobby Heenan book that he wrote. If you ever get a chance to read those books, if you have a bad day, read a Bobby Heenan book. I mean,
yes.
But he was talking about Vern Gagne. They were always driving to the matches. And you remember, you know, AWA was up there in the Northwest. So, of course, the venues were like 1,000 miles apart from one another. Vern Gagne went out and bought this beat-up Cessna and was flying guys back and forth on that thing. So he told Heenan and the rest of them, he says, you guys get on the plane, we're going to fly you there. And Heenan goes, I'm not getting on that plane. And Vern Gagne says, what are you, chicken? He says, you chicken? And Bobby Heenan goes, I just need to know how many eggs you want me to crap out.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome, Dave.
He had an answer for everything. He was great.
I tell you what, gentlemen, this has been wonderful. We have almost reached our 90-minute time limit, and I want to thank all of you for being here. And I'm going to ask every one of you, can we come back and do this again in a couple of weeks? I will call you and make sure that I'll make sure that it works for everyone's schedule. I want to get this group back on here. I know we've had some fans that wanted to call in and ask some questions. They did not have a chance to do it. I want them to get a chance to do that. We might even explode this thing to 2 hours next time. But this has been probably the best 90 minutes of wrestling with Papa Stroh, Greg Bo Watson, Brett Watson, Dave Atwater, Dave Atwell. I don't know why I want to get your name wrong. Dave Atwell and John Strickland. This has been the most fun I've ever had on a radio show in my life.
Amen.
I want to say thank you to everybody for being on here. I want to close real quickly. Papa Stroh, where are you Saturday?
Saturday, I'm at the National Guard Army Saturday night for UPWA Pro Wrestling, theupwa.com, so you can find out more ticket info and everything. And, of course, Sunday I'm with you, Charlotte Comic-Con, at the Embassy Suites.
We're going to have a blast.
Carolina, man. Can't wait.
That's right, and we're going to be with Greg Bo Watson. And I tell you what, Papa Stroh, Greg Bo, Brett, are you going to be there in Charlotte with him, with your dad?
Oh, yes, sir, I am.
Well, good. Then we're going to get
there.
A publicity picture together. We'll get us a picture together, and we'll use it for our next round on this one. well, I don't know what we're going to call it, but it's got to have a name, and it's the most fun on Thursday night that you can have on the internet. So I want to say thank you again. I'm going to list our guests and our panelists off, and all the folks that called in were waiting. Sorry, we'll get to you. We're going to have this in a couple of weeks. I want to thank Papa Stroh, Greg Bo Watson, Brett Watson, Dave Atwell, John Strickland, and everybody that listened in to Comic-Con Stars. This is Dr. John. We'll see you Saturday night at UPWA Wrestling in Wilmington. I'll be there, and Sunday at the Big Charlotte Comic-Con Embassy Suites in Concord Mills, North Carolina. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you again very soon, and we'll see everybody next week on WCW Retro on Wednesday at 9 and Comic-Con Stars on Thursday. Thank you.
Later, guys.
Later.
Have a good evening, everybody. Thanks.
God bless you, guys. See you
all. Take care.
You too, guys. Later.